Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm your host Chris Manning from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today I have a really great show for you. I'm Michael Sykes from Bullets Forever, and My Mind on Sports is here. We're going to preview the Cavs-Wizards game. We talked a little bit about politics, talked a little bit about how NBA players have reacted to the outcome of the 2016 presidential election, and we talked a little about sneakers. So we covered a lot, maybe our most wide-ranging show today, so I hope you guys enjoy. And as always, please go give us that 5-star rating and review on iTunes. It helps other people find the show, and we appreciate the 5-star love. We really, really do. And also, please submit those mailbag questions. We love it when we get really good mailbag questions. I've had a lot in the past couple weeks. And just drop those to me on Twitter at LockedOnCavs@gmail.com or to LockedOnCavs on Twitter. So please take care of that. And without further ado, here's today's show.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Like, we're going to talk about the Wizards, obviously, but the first thing I think we're going to hop right into is talking about something that is very raw right now, and that's the election. We're not going to talk about the politics of the election, per se, and if you really want our takes on that, you go look at our Twitters from the past couple days, but I think something that's really interesting in terms of the NBA, and specifically with the team I cover, the Cavs, is they were at the White House yesterday and Thursday. You had LeBron obviously publicly supported Hillary Clinton. J.R. Smith was at the Clinton rally. Richard Jefferson then Snapchatted that he's excited to go, but this is the last time he thought maybe a player, NBA team rather, is going to be there for a couple of years. And I think it's also at a time where we thought maybe we'd see some protests in the NBA and whatnot, but let's start with the Richard Jefferson thing. Do you think that's actually something we could see?
I think it is. It's obviously something that, he's considering. I'm assuming that he's talked to, his teammates about that in case, they win again. It's something that has to be considered here with the climate, the current political climate in this country right now. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case, if that did happen, if the next NBA champion didn't visit the White House. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they did anyway, because for a lot of these guys, this is what they dreamed of growing up. Everyone wants to, hit that game winning shot in game 7 of the NBA Finals and get that that game clinching chase down block.
Yeah, I guess. And the stop. Don't forget the stop. Like, I don't know. I got the longest response from Obama. Like, it matters, man.
It did. Yeah. Definitely. So for a lot of these guys, that's a moment that that may only come once in a lifetime. And so when it comes for, no matter what team you play on, no matter where you're from, where you come from, that's something that, you're going to remember forever. So, I don't know, maybe somebody feels that way, but I also wouldn't be surprised if, an entire team didn't show up.
Yeah, I think it really depend on the team, and also we have another year until, that would happen.
Right.
As much as I am not, I'm of a certain mind about things, things could change in a year, I guess. Like, that, it's something that, we can't really know exactly what's going to happen in a year from now on any level, I guess, but it is something I think would matter on the team. I think if you have a team like the Cavs, where I think you have LeBron James is a politically active guy, who's a well-thought-out guy, if it's a team that doesn't have guys that really operate in that way, because no one is under an obligation to think about things that way, right? Like, they're not under obligation to do so. That's why I think maybe we haven't seen a guy protest yet. Like, we haven't seen a guy kneel. And I know there's the rules, but, like, we haven't seen a guy protest yet. And I honestly would have bet a couple weeks ago that they would have. But, you know, and what we've seen coaches also, guys like Stan Van Gundy and Steve Kerr, two white guys, also, it's worth noting, that have been very vehemently against the president-elect of the United States. And I think the NBA also probably is the most socially forward league of the four major professional sports leagues in the United States.
Yeah. It's just interesting to see kind of how the league is reacting right now, especially when you compare it to, you know, the NFL and how things are going there. You know, even on you know, lower levels where you have like Nick Saban saying that he didn't even know yesterday was election day and things like that. You know, it's an interesting contrast, and it's interesting that people are kind of not afraid to step into the realm of politics from the kind of socially gray sports atmosphere where there's no real politicking, I guess. When it comes to sports. So it's interesting that a lot of NBA figures kind of aren't really afraid to step out there. But, you know, it's something that I think the league has done really well with over the last 2 or 3 years, I guess now. Kind of starting with the whole Donald Sterling thing. You know, I think they've handled themselves really well. They've had a few missteps here and there, but, you know, it's everyone's going to. You're not going to play everything perfectly, but I just appreciate the thoughtfulness that everyone has kind of going into this situation and will probably have over the next 4 years.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a dialogue we'll continue having. I think, you know, the first time Donald Trump goes to an NBA game, assuming he does that, like, that will be a moment that'll be very interesting, because I think, like, when the Cavs played in front of Obama in Chicago last year, it was a very big moment for them. Like, they were very excited about that. They were very nervous for that. I don't know if that would be the case if Donald Trump's sitting courtside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if it's Mike Pence. I don't know if, like, these guys are going to be as excited about that. And interesting to see how that sort of plays itself out. And, you know, if let's say a player does protest, or let's say a team does decide they don't want to go to the White House, like, how does the fan base react? Does it depend on where that fan base is? I think, at least I do, at least to an extent, I think, and I'm probably numb to this because of I'm in a tunnel on NBA Twitter, but it doesn't seem like there is the same type of fans you maybe see in other leagues that have done some pretty heinous things at NFL games. Like, the fans in Buffalo have done some very racially heinous things. And we haven't seen that with NBA fans. There are certainly probably basketball fans out there who are doing some racially insensitive things and have those thoughts. But I don't know if it's as widespread or as common as I think we've seen it to be among some NFL fans, at least.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't want to paint with a broad brush here, I guess.
Correct.
So I think we'll probably... If, let's say, hypothetically, in this hypothetical situation, the Cavs do play in front of either Trump or Pence or someone from Trump's cabinet or something like that, and you know, they choose to protest or something during that game, or they don't go to the White House, the Cavs win another title and they just don't go to the White House, I think there will be fans who are upset about that, but I'm not sure. Like, I just don't know, I guess, how they'll react to it. Like, it'll be interesting to see, I guess, because right now, you know, we don't really know how we know how people are thinking, I guess, but we don't know what they're going to do. And it's so odd, because this whole election cycle, not even just the election period, but just the campaigning overall, has the country it's pretty shook right now. It's a lot of division, a lot of divisive language going around, and sports is normally seen as this sacred place where people can come together and unite and be one. But it's kind of not becoming the case anymore. So it'll be interesting to see how not only the players handle that, but the fans handle that. And I think it'll take the league kind of policing itself and starting their own, just starting their own initiatives to make sure that these things don't get out of hand, like they don't escalate. Like I'm not saying, and I actually wrote about this a few weeks ago when the 76ers banned or prevented 7th Streeter from doing the national anthem with a We Matter shirt on. Like, I don't think you can legislate anybody's protest, because then it's not really protest anymore. It's something less. So I don't want the league to, you know, tell players that they have to go to the White House, or that they, I don't even think it's right that the league is mandating that players stand during the national anthem. But I do think it would be smart. It would be the right thing to do to kind of put a feeler out there, just to start the conversation of, okay, this is our president now, whether we like it or not. And this is how we have to move forward as a league.
Yeah, I think you're very right. I think the one thing that I think will be interesting is if someone does protest. Like, I've already kind of said this, but I think if someone does protest, I think that would be the microcosm of how people would react. Because I mean, it hasn't happened yet. And I don't know how this is at Wizards games, but the national anthem at the queue is something the fans, they don't always have someone sing the anthem by themselves. It is someone that sings it with the whole crowd. That leads them off. So it would be sort of obvious. And if it's a player, they're on the floor, they're standing. If they're sitting on the bench, you're going to notice that. And the other thing is, I think you're exactly right. I don't think people like when their politics and sports mix.
Yeah.
I think the other day I literally posted, at Fear the Sword, I posted a very general news story about LeBron James appearing in Hillary Clinton's rally. Just embedded a video, just said, like, you know, this is the current polling numbers. This is just the basic who, what, when, where, why of the story. No opinion, no offering a take on this. I'm like, okay, this is not my place to really do this in this article. That's not what this is about. And then the first comment is like, can we stop missing the basketball and the politics? And I'm just like, well, it's LeBron James. Like, he's a public figure,
right?
Endorsing the person running for the highest office in the country. This is a newsworthy thing,
right? Exactly. It's tough to, let me not say this, because I don't understand it when people say they don't want to mix their politics with sports. Because, I mean, these are people in real life. You know, these people have feelings. These people have backgrounds. They have emotions. Just because they play basketball or football or hockey or baseball doesn't mean that they can't care or they have to be robotic or something like that. So when they insert their political opinions into this atmosphere, we have to acknowledge it as a news source for people. You know what I mean? Like, we can't just say, like, LeBron can't endorse Hillary Clinton and you guys not say anything about it.
Yeah.
Or not even acknowledge it, because then that would be you all blatantly ignoring something that one of the biggest sources of news that you all report on do. And that's not right. That's right. Unethical.
Yeah, so there's like an obligation to cover it.
Exactly. And so I think you know, we should probably just prepare for a world where these two things are clashing, where our sports and our politics are not necessarily one, but they're somewhat intertwined.
Yeah, I think you're 100% correct. I think you hit it on the head there. And I think that just fundamentally, sports and politics are going to mix. Everyone is human. There are things that are, it is an escape for sure, but it is also something where these people do have opinions too, and they are public figures. And to deny them a voice and to be mad if they're sharing a voice seems quite odd to when like you're asking them to be your escape, but you can't deny them the right to be a human and have a voice on something if they have an opinion, whatever that opinion is. I mean, there are conservative players in the NBA. Spencer Hawes, Adai Joseph from the Sporting News literally tweeted the other day that Spencer Hawes had a Hillary for prison shirt, and like that, he has a right to do that too. I think that is a good no. I think that is quite a little out there, but like he has the right to do that because he's a human being in the United States of America, where he has the right to have his opinions.
Exactly, exactly. You can't take that from someone, and I don't think like people should accept this, because at the end of the day, I think it makes us a smarter country. It brings our awareness to an entirely different level, and it allows us to discuss things that we normally, like, you a lot of people probably can't even discuss this stuff with their families, you know, just because of how divisive it can be. But if we can figure out how to talk about this in, you know, terms that are relatively simple to us, and I feel like we can do that outside of you know, two teams going up against each other.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I think that overall will probably be a good thing for the public.
Yeah. I think you're right. But Napa
Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
If you're someone that's waiting for the actual basketball talk, we're going to get into that now. But and thanks to Mike, he's someone whose opinion I really respect. And who's, I really wanted to, that's just something that's going to talk about. Something on the show.
I appreciate that.
No, of course, man. And like, literally, if you're listening to this show, it is in my Twitter bio, because I don't like having to tweet this at people when they get mad at me for tweeting about politics. I'm not going to stick to sports. I think they're intertwined. I mean, I had Dave Zirin on the show not too long ago, and he would talk about protests, and like, he's the very definition of someone who does not just stick to sports. And I think it's something we should talk about. It's something that I think is fair to talk about. I'm not going to come at you with a hour episode on, you know, polling numbers or something like that. But when it matters, and when you have a guy like LeBron James, I'm going to talk about it. And when it matters to the NBA as a whole, I'm going to talk about it. But the Cavs are playing the Wizards. It's a rivalry that dates back a while. The first match between these two teams this year, but Mike, I've only watched a little bit of Wizards basketball this year, and I'm not sure how many of my listeners have watched the Wizards a ton. But just what's your general assessment of them so far this season?
I don't really have a great one right now, to be honest with you, because I can't. It's so hard to get a pulse on this team right now, because they came into the season saying they wanted to be one of the best defensive teams in the league. They wanted to get back to, you know, focusing on defense and then having their offense come from their defense, rather than like last year trying to switch over to a quote unquote pace and space offense and just having it blow up in their faces. So they are, I believe, 23rd. They ranked 23rd in defensive efficiency this season, and it's only a 7-game sample right now, and they've played some pretty tough teams. But at the same time, if you're going to you know, pride yourself on defense, then 23rd is unacceptable no matter who you're playing. They've played the And to be honest with you, they're only a few shots away from being 4-3 or something. Like, they lost to the Memphis Grizzlies, where Marc Gasol literally hit 3 3-pointers in the span of 6 minutes, I want to say.
Yeah.
Which was pretty insane. It was a pretty good game. But there's that, and there's the Houston game, where it's tied with going into the fourth quarter, and then Houston's defense just kind of takes over, which is a real indictment on the Wizards offense for being so awful and stagnant. And that's another thing that they need to work on. But I honestly think their defense, if that's going to be their staple, is a more pressing concern at this point.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, you look at what they are right now. Per Basketball Reference, as I'm looking right now, they're bottom 10 in both offensive rating and defensive rating, which obviously isn't great. They're also near the bottom of the East, which is also, I would say, somewhere I wouldn't expect them to stay. Like, right now, they're behind the Heat, the Nets, the Magic, the Knicks. Those are teams I wouldn't expect them to finish behind. Even a team like Milwaukee that is 4-3 right now, coming into the year, I figured Washington is better than them. I mean, is it some of this, you know, they don't have Ian Mahimi, you know, John Wall and the Bradley Beal thing? I know that definitely probably gets overblown, but is there something there? Is it the new coach? Like, what is holding the Wizards kind of back right now?
I think there's a combination of things. In every single game that they've played this season, they've taken a lead into the fourth quarter. Let me take that back. They were actually tied with the Raptors going into the fourth quarter at 92. And the Raptors ended up pulling away in that one. So there's something with the way that their offense is working that they just go on these scoreless droughts. Like, they'll have droughts of 4 or 5 minutes at a time where they just can't score. And I think it's a mixture of the way that that the bench has been playing this season, because it's been awful. When John Wall and Brad Beal and Otto Porter, who has really emerged as their second best player this season so far, when they're not playing, things just tend to break down, which is pretty – I mean, that's really bad because they – they can't. Brad Beal especially is the type of player who should not be playing 36 to 38 minutes per game.
Right.
And if you need that out of him, then he's probably going to break down 9 times out of 10. Like, that's what we've seen these last few seasons. So when you have guys who, you know, they've been injured in their careers before, and your bench is terrible, and you need them to play more minutes, that's not a good sign. So I think it's been a combination of their shortcomings on offense, their shortcomings on the bench, and kind of the sporadic defense, I would say. That's probably how I would characterize it, which is not good, because that's all three phases of the game. So
you're just like, well, this is wrong, and this is wrong. I mean, so do we know if Wall going to play, be able to play Friday? Is he going to be suspended or anything like that?
Yeah, so he, CSN Mid-Atlantic actually broke the news today that he is not facing any discipline from the league for the flagrant 2 foul that he had yesterday after he just elbowed Marcus Smart for whatever reason. Yeah. So there's that. He'll play on Friday. It's expected that he'll play on Friday, and he'll sit out on Saturday when they play Chicago.
So yeah, I mean, that's at least good that you don't have to, you know, not have your point guard in there. But to kind of look at that a little bit more, that the Wall Beal thing, I think you were one of the people that tweeted this, said that was overblown when all that reports of them not getting along, or that was something that maybe we're making too big of a deal about this. But the more and more I've looked at it, there is like this weird overlap with them a little bit. Beal handles the ball more than I ever thought he did when I looked at the numbers and watched the tape of them playing. And in a Wall, you know, if for as good as he is, his flaw is that he's not a good shooter. He's not a good off-ball shooter. As Cavs fans like Justin Rowan and Ryan Morton will gladly remind you on Twitter all the time. But how's that partnership working out earlier in the year?
So I think it's been... it hasn't been bad, but it hasn't been great either. Like, they've had some games. They've had more games, actually, than I can remember with where they've both put up pretty good lines. I think the other night they combined in their loss to Houston, they combined for 21 points, I believe. In the game before that, when they they beat Atlanta, they played pretty well together. I don't remember what their line was collectively, but I know it was really good. And so I think on the court, you know, their chemistry seems to be there. Beal hasn't been playing up to par overall this season, whether it's been with or without Wall on the floor. So, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done still with them both. And I think Wall has actually been really good so far this year. He's actually attacking the basket more than I've seen him do in about 3 or 4 years now, which is a great sign. He's averaging 21 and 9, and I think his PER is somewhere around 23 or 24, something like that. So just as a snapshot, he's been pretty good. But Beal, on the other hand, is shooting like 30% from three, and just 36% overall, which is not what you want to see out of a max player. So there's definitely a lot of work to be done there with the backcourt still.
Do you feel good about Beal's deal? I mean, I know it's like early in the season, and that'd be super takey to write him off or like have a certain take on him now. But even going back to how you felt about it when it came through, like how do you feel about that contract?
I still feel pretty good about it. Well, let me preface it by saying this: I did not feel great when they had to do it in the first place. I think with a player like that who's 23. And is a career around 40% shooter from three. You kind of have to pay that guy max money, especially when he's only 23 years old and is capable of handling the ball a little bit. But at the same time, he's had these stress fractures. He's had freak injuries. He's been injured season after season after season. And then comes the report of him and Wall not necessarily getting along all the time and mixing well on the court. So I guess I was skeptical of the deal and made myself kind of comfortable with it. I still say that I'm still pretty comfortable with it, because while he's not shooting the greatest right now, I think he went like 1 for 8 or something like that yesterday, which is pretty awful, but he's getting to the line more than he's ever been this season. He hasn't been settling for mid-range jumpers as much, and his three-point shot is like 10 percentage points behind where it normally is. So I feel like he's due to regress back to the mean at any point. And when he does, he'll probably look something like he did last season before he got hurt. And hopefully he stays healthy enough. Because with Beal hitting, say, 44% of his shots or something like that, and maybe shooting somewhere from like 36 to 37% from three, that's still pretty good when you put that in context with what Porter and Wall have been able to do this season.
Yeah, and that leads into the other thing that I think is interesting is who's the third best player in this team. That's obviously under the assumption that Wall and Beal are the two best guys in this team. I wrote for the step, or was HB at third? Was the step? I don't know what the timeline's all convoluted, but. I thought coming into the year that the third most important guy on this team might be Markieff Morris, because he can defend those two spots, he can stretch the floor, he gives them something that they don't have, and if you're playing a team like the Cavs, you need a guy like that. But who has been the third best player, the third most important player, at least, on this team?
I would probably say it's Marcin Gortat. But let me say this, Beal is not... Like, he should be...
He's not actually
the second best guy on the team. He should be, but he definitely is not right now.
Yeah.
I can confidently say right now that Otto Porter has been the second best guy on the team. And after that, I would say it's probably Gortat, and then I would say it's been Beal, and then Morris, and then whatever bench order you want, because they've all been pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I've seen you tweet about. I've seen other people mention, like, what's up with the Wizards bench? Like, what is the issue right now? I know you don't have Mahimi on that team right now, but Like, what's sort of the issue?
So they don't have a great shot creator. They have Trey Burke and Tomas Satoransky, who have been some combination of their lead ball handlers, and they've got like Marcus Thornton and Burke just taking these crazy shots. And then when things break down, if he's able to play in that game, if he can stay on the court defensively, Andrew Nicholson is playing through the post, which he's not bad at, but like that's not in today's NBA, that's not the look that you want. Like if the defense has you taking actual shots from the post, not just having possessions run through post offense, but taking actual shots from there, that's exactly what they want. So they've just had a lot of inefficient guys who have just been taking a lot of the shots.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's obviously not,
and they can't defend. Let me just add that
they can't defend. That's like a nightmare scenario. Like that's I mean, what everything we sort of talked about, and I didn't really mean it to be this way, has been sort of bleak. I mean, are you, as someone who covers the team, are you optimistic that they can get better or that they should get better?
I think right now I'm pretty optimistic right now. As optimistic as you can get. I think I'm probably one of the most optimistic people around this team right now. Just because I've seen John Wall play so well so far this year, and like I said, I feel like Beal is going to regress back to his normal production at some point. And then they have Mahimi coming back, who is probably their fifth or sixth best player, and will certainly help with their defensive issues that they've been having. So I think, I'm pretty optimistic, especially with Porter playing the way that he is. I keep going back to him, but he's been so good this season. He has like 27 second chance points or something like that in seven games as a 6'8 small forward wing, 195 pounds or something like that. And he's shooting like 61%, 62% from the field. He's just been really good. And so I think at some point, you know, all of these fourth quarter leads that they've blown and all of these mistakes that they've made, like those are going to subside, and they'll win some of the games that they probably shouldn't win. But they'll just do it just because they're kind of going back to their normal production. I think this season's start has kind of reminded me of the 2013 season, where they started like 3-7 or 3-8 or something like that. And I think ultimately they went like 44-38 and ended up making the playoffs that year and beat the Bulls in the first round. So I feel like I still feel like they're a playoff team, but I wouldn't be surprised if they weren't. But either way, I think the team is definitely better than what they've been playing like that, or what they've been playing like in how their record looks.
Yeah. But let me ask you this. This has been something that I think is how the most interesting thing to watch is teams play the Cavs, just because every team has tried to do something slightly different and it hasn't worked. What do you do for the Wizards to defend LeBron? Like, what do you do for him? Do you give, like the Celtics, for example, were giving up off-ball threes pretty regularly. Other teams have really just kind of let LeBron drive and let him shoot. What do you do if you're Washington to do what you can to defend LeBron?
I would just try to guard him. Whatever you do to LeBron, it's not going to work, because he's great. He's probably the best player in the league. I don't think he is, but I know a lot of people do.
Oh, Mike, whoa.
Listen,
a Cavs podcast, and
I'm here. I'm going to say what I want. No, but like I would say, like, I don't have any issue with people saying that he's the best player in the league. And there are nights where I'm just like, what the hell am I thinking? Like, look at this dude. This is crazy. And then I just watch. Like, there's so many great basketball players in the league right now, and it's just crazy. And LeBron is one of them. And he's the guy in the league right now. I would say he's definitely the smartest player in the league, I think. Yeah. So whatever you throw at him, he's picking you apart no matter what. So like as far as what I would do to guard him, I think the only weakness that he has is and I don't even feel comfortable saying this, but I just think it's his jump shot. And I don't like you can't leave him when he's off of the ball because he's just going to find some way to cut to the rim with all the other action that's going on, because the Cavs have so many threats offensively that you have to worry about. Like, helping off of LeBron just doesn't really – I mean, it doesn't do the job. So I just think you have to try to guard him the best that you can one-on-one, and it's not going to work. And if he might drop 40 or 50 on you, but, you know, if he's not out here getting – you know, 8, 9, 10 assists, I think that's a plus. Because I honestly think that's what LeBron is best at, getting other guys involved and just making terrific plays around him. So, I have no answers.
Yeah. I mean, on yesterday's show, I talked to Carter Rodriguez, and I think you're right. I think the Cavs' offense this year is a little bit better with LeBron taking more of a distributor role. He's still operating the offense, really, but he's doing more. Kyrie's shooting more threes, and I think he's the best player in the world. I think the finals cemented that for me, and I think if you watch him shoot jump shots this year, you can tell when he's just kind of like, I guess I have to shoot this. Like, you can just look at his motion and his legs, and you're like, okay. Like, it's really funny that he can just, like, tank kind of so much, and it sort of works out, but we'll kind of ask two more questions, then we will get you out of here. The first thing is, I'm gonna give you the form right here. Try to tell me why John Wall is better than Kyrie Irving, if that's something you believe.
Listen, man, this is easy for me. Like, this is like a layup. Okay, like, come on, Chris. Like, no, but Kyrie's great. Like, and I don't have any issue with anybody who thinks Kyrie is the better player, because like I'm at a point where I think that they're probably pretty even, but in the situation that Kyrie is in right now with LeBron and being the scorer on that team, I think that's perfect for him, and he's the best player to be in that role, I think, better than anyone else in the league. But no, I mean, John Wall is just like, if he were like 6'8" or 6'9" or something like that, he would be a passer on the level of LeBron. Like, I don't think he's obviously not the scorer that LeBron is, because LeBron is an elite scorer. But, you know, John is like, he's just a walking 20-10. And I think, you know, you don't want offenses that are kind of centric around one player. But I don't think that Wall necessarily plays in one of those. I just think that he's the only guy who can make plays on this team, and he's so good at it that you really just kind of have to do it. So, like, when he's averaging, like, 10 and 11 assists per game at over certain stretches in the season, like, I don't necessarily see that as a negative, like maybe Justin would. And the way that he's a really good defender. He's always been a really good defender. He took a huge step back defensively last year, but he's really been good this season. And it's just, I don't know, man. Like, the things that he can do, like the passes that he can make, are just really, really good. And he's just like, he sees the game differently, I think. And it's made me kind of watch the game differently. Like, he's one of the only players I've seen make those same skip passes that LeBron can make, you know? And I think he falls in love with them too much, and that leads to a lot of his turnovers sometimes. But I think just being able to make those plays that nobody else in the league can, I think that's really special.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the opinion that if you threw Kyle Lowry, Mike Conley, Kyrie, John Wall, and I'm forgetting somebody, and I'm forgetting like two people, so someone's going to get mad at me, but if you threw these guys in a hat, and you picked one out, and you're like, okay, this is your point guard, you have to build around this guy, I think there's like John Wall and Kyrie in that same class of point guard where it's very clear that there's, and Damian Lillard's the guy I'm forgetting. Like, you could pick any of those guys and I think you'd be pretty well set off. Like, I think you'd be in a good position with any of them because they're all really good. I think they all have their own issues. Like, Kyrie and Dame aren't great defenders. Wall, you know, struggles as a shooter. Lowry has, you know, well, Lowry and Conley both kind of maybe have conditioning or health issues. Like, they're concerned with every guy and they're not quite in that Russ, CP3, Steph Curry level.
Right.
They're all really, really good. And I think it's always fun to watch Kyrie and John Wall play because they play so differently. Kyrie isn't as fast. He's not quite as explosively athletic, but he's, I think he's a little bit, he's definitely more skilled with the ball in his hands as a dribbler. He's a better shooter. Wall's a better passer. Wall's a better defender. And Wall's a more of a high flyer and more, a faster player. It's really fun to kind of watch them go back and forth. To me, that's the matchup I care about most tomorrow because I think Kevin Love's going to play Markieff Morris. I think Thompson Gortat should be interesting just because we just saw Tristan Thompson sort of struggle with Dwight Howard, struggle with a bigger guy who's, you know, maybe not necessarily stronger than him, but bigger than him. And LeBron is LeBron, and J.R. Smith and Bradley Beal is whatever, because J.R. Smith, J.R. Smith, like, might outplay Bradley Beal tomorrow, but like Kyrie and John Wall is super fun and it's super interesting.
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm looking forward to tomorrow. As far as our new overlord Otto Porter going up against LeBron, I don't really I don't know if LeBron's good enough, man. I'll be honest with you.
someone's gonna come in your Twitter mentions and like not understand, like have listened to this podcast up to this point and then just like heard that and just like they're not listening to anything else. they have snapped.
I apologize.
Yeah, no need to apologize. They can, if they come at you, they're coming at me. But we're gonna wrap this up. That's kind of we're talking about the game. But Mike, like me, we're both kind of, we like shoes, and that's like a very general way of saying we spend more money than we should on basketball shoes. It's an interesting time right now because I think our generation is still very Nike heavy. But like you see a lot of kids wearing Curries and stuff. But what are you wearing? Like, what do you like right now? Like, what stands out to you?
So I think mostly right now I have mostly Nikes, I would say, but I'm kind of turning into an Adidas guy. I can't lie to you right now, Chris. I love the Ultra Boost. I love the NMDs. I have like two pairs of tubulars right now. Like, they're really comfortable, really good, really cool designs. And I am really excited about James Harden's shoe release coming up. I am getting the olive colored James. I don't even know what they're called. I guess they're like Harden ones or whatever.
Yeah, they look a lot better than I thought they would.
Yeah, I thought initially when I looked at them, they just looked, I don't know, man, like they were a normal shoe initially. And then like I saw him wearing them. And it was just like, wow, like, I really feel like I need to get this. Like, it looked like a, it looked like the crazy light was 2.5, actually. It looks almost exactly like that. But I think there's just a difference in where the upper splits. And it's a really cool design to me. And they look really comfortable. Like, I'm super minimalist when it comes to my shoes. Like, I like simple colors, simple designs, and just I'm not a super colorful guy. So like you can kind of, I don't know, I feel like you can reel me in if something is like one color and it's a really cool color and a really cool design. And I just think that that's what Harden shoes are. So I really like those. And I'm really excited to see the Dame Lillard 3s also. So I'm really feeling like an Adidas guy right now, but when the LeBron 14s and the Kyrie 3s come out, we'll see where I'm at.
Yeah, right now I agree with you. I haven't bought any Adidas yet, but I do like I like everything that you've mentioned. I really want to get a pair of the tubulars. You definitely see the kind. I think you do see some Kanye West kind of rub off a little bit with Adidas. Like, you're seeing like some of the, they're like kind of just like straight up, like the tubulars are kind of rip off of the Yeezys in like some ways. Like the style of those shoes is like, I mean, there's the Kanye West influence there, which is fun. Like, it's smart. Like, it makes a lot of sense.
That's the whole
It's the point.
Of Kanye West.
Yeah, like that's the point of Kanye. Like you get him, you don't make Yeezys that are $110, but you make shoes that look like Yeezys that are $110. And I've only heard really good things about the tubulars. With the Nike stuff, like I'm not too excited about the next LeBrons. I don't like love LeBron's main shoe. I have a pair of the Soldier 10s right now that I love.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was skeptical a little bit because of the straps, but they don't have the laces like the KD9s, or they don't have the laces, and they fit right to my foot after the first time I wore them, which is great.
Nice.
I got the black ones with like the clear front and then like the candy straps, so like a little bit of color. I play in the Kyrie 2s, which is like maybe not the best decision because of my like how I'm built, but they're comfortable after I wore them a couple times. And then I have the 13 mm-hmm. lows, and I like LeBron lows a lot more than I like any LeBron high. Like I'm not a big fan of LeBron's main highs. Like I like the lows because they're kind of, you can wear them casually and you can wear them with a bunch of stuff, but like the highs don't do as much for me. And they're all LeBron shoes are also kind of heavy for a shoe.
Yeah, they definitely are. I actually didn't like the 13 highs. I only like the 13 lows. But the last three LeBron shoes before that, so the 10s, 11 and 12s, like I love those.
Yeah.
But I still have yet to get a pair of 13 lows. So interestingly enough, like I've seen them and I've had the intention of buying them for probably the last, 3 or 4 months now, but instead, I bought some KD9s, which I'm happy with my investment, but I probably would rather have LeBrons at this point.
Do you like the KD9s? Because if I get something else and I don't get the tubulars, I would probably get the KD9s, that Birds of Paradise color that's got the teal. Mm-hmm. And like
yeah,
a little
those
bit of
are so good.
They're comfy.
I have the USA ones, and they were not comfortable at first. But after you wear them for a while, I would recommend getting probably, if you're going to get them, get at least a half size up. Just because they're really tight around the arch of your foot. And it took me a while to kind of wear them in still, even after that. Like, I love the design more than anything, but it's not the most comfortable shoe, and it's still not like my most comfortable shoe, but it is comfortable now, and I can move around in it. Like I wouldn't play basketball in it though. Like that's one thing I would not do.
Yeah, I'm a high top guy for basketball, like almost exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
Let's wrap it up on this. Is there a shoe out there right now that you don't like at all, that you just are like, why would you spend money on that? Because I have one, and it's like one that got mocked right when it came out, and I love the player that wears them, but.
So we're talking basketball shoes or just shoes in general?
There's like a NBA related pair of shoes that you've seen like a player wear that you're like, why would you wear those? I'm game. Like
I like some of the designs on this shoe, but I never understood what was the deal with the HyperRef. Like I never got it.
Me either.
Like it looks okay. In some instances, like I think when the Fragment versions of the shoe came out, when Nike collabed with them, like I like them, but just looking at the shoe in person on foot, like it just looks so weird. Like I couldn't wear it. I really couldn't wear it anywhere.
Yeah, for me, it's the Adidas Crazy Explosives, like the Wiggins ones.
Because
like they look like I saw them in person, they look better, but like and it when they came out, I was like, those look like they're kind of 90s, like they're not really pulling off the laceless thing as well as the Nikes do, and I don't think all the clutter on like the heel and where the stripes are, I just think they look like they're kind of much. Like I don't mind that they're high, I'm sure they're comfortable, but like I'm like, you could have done better with this.
I didn't know what they were trying to do with this design. Like I couldn't tell if this was supposed to be primarily a lifestyle shoe or a basketball shoe, and I think they kind of tried to combine it. I do like the way the sole looks, but that's probably about it with the shoe. And I tried it on the other day, it's not comfortable at all. Like I couldn't even take like three steps in it. I was just like, no, let me get this off right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, the design is okay. Like it reminded me when I first saw it, it reminded me kind of a Crazy 8, just with the way that the body of it all looks. But like, I don't know. Maybe they'll come out with a cool colorway, that I'll just end up getting, and maybe I'll fall for them. I don't know, but I don't see it right now with that either.
Yeah, I'd be more likely to buy like a pair of Jordans, and I don't even like love the Jordans, like the 21 or the 31s. Mm-hmm. Like I don't really love those, to be honest with you. I think like they're kind of, I'd rather just have the Jordan logo. And like, yeah. when with the off court shooting, it's like, I understand them going for that, and it's like a very, it makes sense with the rest of the Adidas stuff that they have. But there's only like one guy in the league that you could really build a shoe for as like an off court shoe. And you could probably do it with LeBron, I guess. And maybe you could do it with Kobe because like his shoes almost look like soccer, indoor soccer shoes anyway.
Right. Yeah.
But Westbrook's the only guy you could just actually make like an off court shoe on, and it'd be like the whole sales pitch. Like if you're making a shoe that Andrew Wiggins is gonna wear a lot, like I don't really get that.
Right. Right. Exactly. Like it doesn't make a lot of sense, but Adidas doesn't really have the most marketable athletes right now either. So
no, it's like Wiggins.
Wiggins, Harden, and Lillard are their guys right now, which is like, Harden's great, Lillard's cool, and then Wiggins is like, he could be something someday. They have a lot of young players. They have a lot of younger players, but Derrick Rose.
They have Kristaps now, which is
yeah, they do have Kristaps. Yeah.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
That Latvian market, man. I mean, it's the New York market, but I mean, like, because I mean, Nike does have, like, kind of the guys that you'd expect. Under Armour obviously has Curry, and I think Moody is like the other guy they have. Under Armour basketball, like, just a lot of ugly for me. I don't really get it. Yeah. I get the appeal if you're a kid because you want to wear the stuff Curry's wearing, but like for me, I'm good.
I think have you seen the Curry 3s?
They're better. I think they're better than the Curry 2s.
They're definitely way better. I saw them in a wine and gold actually colorway, which is interesting.
Future Cavaliers backup point guard Stephen Curry.
Yeah, that's really interesting. But I really like the colorway though, and it looked really good on that shoe. So I may or may not get them.
Yeah.
But I've never tried one on, but I've heard that they're really comfortable.
I haven't owned anything Under Armour, like, shoe-wise since I had a pair of football cleats in, like, middle school. So, like, it would take a lot. I'm a Nike guy, preferably. Like, I like some of the stuff Adidas is doing for sure. I run in New Balances because they fit my feet really well. Mm-hmm. But I might have to reconsider that now, too, because of some stuff. But, Mike, this has been a lot of fun. We covered this has been the most wide-ranging podcast I've done, and I'm happy because I got to talk about the three things, or three, like, the five things that I find most interesting. Like, if we somehow shoehorn comic books and, like, history into this, like, it would have worked. But 3 out of 5, that's 60%. Like, that's pretty good. So thanks for coming on, man.
That's pretty good. That's great. That's a great shooting percentage.
Yeah, like give me the max. Like, I need, like, give me that Bradley Beal max deal. Like, that's what I'm out here looking for. But, Mike, if people aren't already following you on Twitter, where can they find you? Where can they find your writing?
Follow me on Twitter, at Mike D. Sykes. I do have a shoe Twitter, but I'm not going to put that out there because I just like to track
I didn't even know you had a shoe Twitter.
Yeah, I keep it secret because I follow a lot of shoe accounts there, so I can kind of look at and see what's releasing and then go for it.
Just, yeah, so it doesn't get lost in like that main Twitter.
Right. Exactly. It was a pretty good plan. I would do it if I were you.
Yeah. I mean that way like the high volume Justin Rowans and stuff like the DeMar DeRozans of Twitter can stop clogging stuff up, so I stop missing shoe stuff.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. You can find my work at Bullets Forever, bulletsforever.com, and mymindonsports.com. I write about the Wizards primarily with Bullets Forever and overall NBA stuff at My Mind on Sports, and I tweet out a lot of links of a lot of other stuff that I do. So, just I would say just mostly follow me on Twitter if you want to keep up with me.
Yeah, go give Mike a follow. Thanks again for Mike for coming on. This has been Chris. This has been Mike, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, where I'm going to drop what is probably the happiest podcast I've ever recorded in Locked On Cavs history. So stay tuned.
Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store-wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls, plus up to 75% off clearance for the whole family right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only.